A small-town prosecuting attorney called his first witness to the stand in a trial, and she was an elderly type of woman. He approached her and said, "Mrs. Jones, do you know me?" And she responded, "Why, yes, I do know you, Mr. Williams. I've known you since you were a young boy, and frankly, you've been a big disappointment to me. You lie, you cheat, you manipulate people, you gossip about them behind their backs. You think you're a rising big shot when you haven't the brains to realize you'll never amount to anything more than a two-bit paper pusher. Yes, I know you." Well, the lawyer was stunned, and so not knowing what to do, he pointed across the room and asked, "Mrs. Jones, do you know the defense attorney?" And again, she replied, yes, I do. "I've known Mr. Bradley since he was a youngster. I used to babysit him for his parents. He, too, has been a real disappointment to me. He's lazy, bigoted. He has a drinking problem. The man can't build a normal relationship with anyone. His law practice is one of the shoddiest in the state." "Yes, I know him." At this point, the judge rapped his gavel to silence the courtroom. Then he called both attorneys to the bench for a private sidebar. In a hoarse whisper, he threatened, "I want to warn you now. If either of you asks her if she knows me, I'll have you jailed for contempt." Well, she remembered how they used to be. How about you? Do you see people as they were, past tense, or as they are, present tense? Or do you see people as they can become, future tense? This afternoon's message is a part of our series, Christmas at the Movies, and we'll draw some spiritual application from the holiday favorite, Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer. In this 1948 movie, damaged toys that don't fit in are discarded by the elves of Santa's workshop, and they end up deposited on the island of misfit toys. Have you ever felt like you don't fit in? Have you ever wished your circumstances were different? Have you ever felt judged by others with an unrealistic standard that doesn't seem fair? This Christmas Eve, I want you to realize that the baby Jesus, that first Christmas, was born. He lived a perfect life here on earth. He died for you. And today, Christ offers hope to all who have felt like a misfit. Former astronaut James Irwin once said, "There's something more important than man walking on the moon, and that is God walking on earth." And Jesus came and lived among us. He experienced life's ups and downs. He became one of us to the point so that he could give us purpose and a better way of living. He felt what you've felt: hurt, loneliness, rejection, pain. He understands how God made you and how valuable you are to God. And that's the first thing for us to realize. God sees you as unique. You're an individual. You're a one-of-a-kind masterpiece. You've been made in the image of God. He made you just like you are. Of all of the earth's current 8 billion inhabitants, no one else has the same fingerprints as you. You are unique. You aren't you by accident. You were fearfully and wonderfully made by your Creator. King David wrote a worship song about it, and he sang it to God. It's Psalm 139. He said, "For you created my inmost being. You knit me together in my mother's womb. I praise you because I am fearfully and wonderfully made. Your works are wonderful. I know that full well." In the movie Rudolph, our star character didn't see that he was unique or valued or special. He only thought of himself as being different, weird, unlike the other reindeer. And maybe you can relate. In this first clip, Santa meets young Rudolph, and Rudolph's father tries to create a cover-up to conceal his son's glowing red nose.
Well, hi there. Aren't you the sturdy little fellow?
Santa.
And smart, too. Great bouncing iceberg.
Now, I'm sure it'll stop as soon as he grows up, Santa.
Well, let's hope so if he wants to make the sleigh team someday.
No, Santa's right. He'll never make the sleigh team. Wait a minute. I've got it. We'll hide Rudolph's nose.
Hide it?
Yeah. Come here, boy. You'll be a normal little buck just like everybody else, right? A chip off the old antlers. Now, you'll get used to it. Put it there, son.
So Rudolph becomes friends with Hermie, a blonde-haired elf who wants more. Not happy to be an elf, Hermie longs to be a dentist and work on teeth. And both Hermie and Rudolph are feeling inadequate. They're both feeling lonely. Both have been treated harshly by those around them. And the next clip, the head elf blasts Hermie for aspiring to be a dentist.
I just thought I found a way to fit in.
You'll never fit in. Now, you come to elf practice and learn how to wiggle your ears and chuckle warmly and go hee-hee and ho-ho and important stuff like that. A dentist. Good grief.
For crying out loud.
Fireball, what's the matter?
Get away from me.
No. What's this nonsense here, Box? After all,
Hey, look at the beak.
Hey, fire snow.
Fireball boy,
fire snow.
Stop calling me names.
Rudolph the red-nosed reindeer.
Aren't you going to laugh at my nose, too?
I think it's a handsome nose. Much better than that silly false one you were wearing.
It's terrible. It's different from everybody else's.
But that's what makes it so grand. Why, any doe would consider herself lucky to be with you.
Well, God sees you as unique. The second truth I want you to realize today is that God sees you as his child. His love is unconditional. Rudolph's girlfriend, Clarice, is the only one who accepted Rudolph and loved him unconditionally. She saw his unique appearance as something positive, not something negative. And the theme of this classic movie is simply an observation of the truth that we're all misfits. While others may ignore or discard us, God is a loving Father who is proud of his creation, eager for his offspring to do well. He loves us because we are his. We've probably all proudly displayed some childhood drawings colored by a son or daughter, a grandchild, or a neighbor kid. I like the statement that says, God loves you so much, he has your picture hanging on his refrigerator. He's proud of you. You're his child. He sees our flaws and still loves us. He wants to repair us where we have been damaged. And the reality is that to some extent, we are all misfits.
Sir, who are you?
I'm the official sentry of the Island of Misfit Toys.
A jack in the box for a sentry?
Yes, my name is...
Don't kill me. Jack.
No, Charlie. That's why I'm a misfit toy. My name is all wrong. No child wants to play with a Charlie in the box, so I had to come here.
How would you like to be a spotted elephant?
Or a choo-choo with square wheels on your caboose?
Or a water pistol that shoots jelly?
We're all misfits.
We're all misfits too. Well, God sees you as unique. God sees you as his child. And finally, I want you to realize that God sees your potential. Mary was just a young teenage peasant girl, but God saw her as someone who could be the mother of his son. Joseph was just a small town carpenter, but God selected him to be the earthly guardian of Jesus. Joseph and Mary were just plain, everyday, ordinary, blue-collar residents of a small fishing village in northern Israel. But God selected humble Joseph and Mary to carry out his eternal purpose and to usher in Jesus to provide the desperately needed combination of salvation and restoration for the fallen human race. The God of grace sees things not just as they are, but as they can become. He sees that potential for good in your life. And you were made to do good. It's in your DNA. Do you realize that Ephesians 2:10 says, "For we are God's handiwork, created in Christ Jesus to do good works, which God prepared in advance for us to do." Well, let's get back to the early part of that chapter, grasping the whole context. This is what it says at the start. "As for you, you were dead in your transgressions and sins, in which you used to live when you followed the ways of this world. All of us also lived among them at one time, gratifying the cravings of our flesh and following its desires and thoughts. But because of his great love for us, God, who is rich in mercy, made us alive with Christ even when we were dead in transgressions. It is by grace you have been saved. For it is by grace you've been saved through faith. This is not from yourselves. It is the gift of God, not by works, so that no one can boast." It's not performance-based. Grace is getting what you don't deserve. We find forgiveness on the basis of what Jesus did for us. And so we live doing good, not in some futile attempt to gain salvation, but with heartfelt gratitude because he has granted us salvation, and we want to say thank you in response to his goodness, to his grand gift, to his grace. Timothy Paul Jones co-authored the book Proof, and he writes, "I never dreamed that taking a child to Disney World could be so difficult, or that such a trip could teach me so much about God's outrageous grace." He said, our middle daughter had been previously adopted by another family. I'm sure this couple had the best of intentions, but they never quite integrated the adopted child into their family of biological children. After a couple of rough years, they dissolved the adoption, and we ended up welcoming an 8-year-old girl into our home. For one reason or another, whenever our daughter's previous family vacationed to Disney World, they took their biological children with them, but they left their adopted daughter with a family friend. And at least in the child's mind, this happened because she did something wrong that precluded her presence on the trip. So by the time we adopted our daughter, she had seen many pictures of Disney World, had heard about the rides, the characters, the parades. But when it came to passing through the gates of the Magic Kingdom, she had always been the one left on the outside. Once I found out about this history, I made plans to take her to Disney World the next time a speaking engagement took our family to the southeastern United States. Jones says, I thought I had mastered the Disney World drill. I knew from previous experiences that the prospect of seeing cast members in freakishly oversized mouse and duck costumes sometimes turns kids into squirming bundles of emotional instability. He said, what I didn't expect was that the prospect of visiting this dream world would produce a stream of downright devilish behavior in our newest daughter. In the month leading up to our trip to the Magic Kingdom, she stole food when a simple request would have gained her a snack. She lied when it would have been easier to tell the truth. She whispered insults that were carefully crafted to hurt her older sister as deeply as possible. And as the days on the calendar moved closer to the trip, her mutinies multiplied. A couple of days before our family headed to Florida, I pulled our daughter onto my lap to talk with her about her latest escapade. "I know what you're going to do," she stated flatly. "You're not going to take me to Disney World, are you?" The thought hadn't actually crossed my mind, but her downward spiral suddenly started to make sense. She knew she couldn't earn her way into the Magic Kingdom, so she had tried and failed that test several times before. So she was now living in a way that placed her as far as possible from the most magical place on Earth. In retrospect, Joan said, "I'm embarrassed to admit it, the moment I was tempted to turn her fear to my own advantage. If you don't start behaving better, you're right, we won't take you." He said, "But I didn't do that. By God's grace, instead I said, 'Is this trip something that we're doing as a family?'" She nodded, brown eyes wide and tear-filled. "Are you part of this family?" Again, she nodded. "Then you're going with us. Sure, there may be some consequences to help you remember what's right and what's wrong, but you're a part of our family, and we're not leaving you behind." Joan said, "I'd like to say that her behavior grew better after that moment, but it didn't. Her choices pretty much spiraled out of control at every hotel or rest stop all the way to Lake Buena Vista, and still we headed to Disney World on the day we had promised, and it was a typical Disney day. Overpriced tickets, overpriced meals, lots of long lines, mingled with just enough manufactured magic to consider maybe coming again someday. In our hotel room that evening, a very different child emerged. She was exhausted, pensive, a little weepy at times, but her month-long facade of rebellion had faded. When bedtime rolled around, I prayed with her, held her, and asked, "So how was your first day at Disney World?" She closed her eyes and snuggled down into her stuffed unicorn. After a few moments, she opened her eyes ever so slightly and said, "Daddy, I finally got to go to Disney World. But it wasn't because I was good. It was because I'm yours." That's the message of outrageous grace. Grace isn't a favor you can achieve by being good. It's the gift you receive by being God's. It's a one-way love that calls you into the kingdom, not because you've been good, but because God has made you his own. That's grace. That's truly amazing. I want you to watch what happens to our misfit Rudolph in this final clip.
So they make it back, and when everybody hears their story, they start to realize maybe they were a little hard on the misfits. Maybe misfits have a place too. Even Santa realizes that maybe he was wrong.
"Rudolph, I promise. As soon as this storm lets up, I'll find homes for all those misfit toys."
"All right, you can open up a dentist office next week after Christmas."
"No, I'm sorry too, Rudolph, for the way I acted."
"Open up! Isn't a fit made up for man or beast?" "Here's the man, and here's the beast. Now calm down, calm down. I reformed this bumble. He wants a job. Look at what he can do."
"Quiet, quiet, please, everybody, quiet.
Quiet.
I've got some bad news, folks. Christmas is going to be canceled. There's nothing I can do. This weather. Yeah. Rudolph, please, could you tone it down a bit? I mean, that nose of yours. That nose. That beautiful, wonderful nose.
Huh?
Rudolph, Christmas is not off, and you're going to lead my team.
I am?
Yes, sir. You and that wonderful nose of yours.
My nose, sir?
Ho, from what I see now, that'll cut through the murkiest storm they can dish up. What I'm trying to say is, Rudolph, with your nose so bright, won't you guide my sleigh tonight?
It will be an honor, sir.
Ready, Rudolph?
Ready, Santa.
Well, let's be on our way. Okay, Rudolph, full power. First stop, the island of Misfit Toys. Up, 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 and away!
God sees your potential. Here's the thing. Jesus is the best thing that has ever happened to me. He loves me in spite of me. He's faithful even when I'm not. I've never had to forgive someone for more than he has had to forgive me. Jesus believes in me even when I don't believe in myself. He knows my potential. He's given me so much. He not only loves me, but he likes me. He sticks with me even when I do something wrong and I knew better. Helen Keller was a remarkable woman who overcame incredible odds and adversity in spite of the fact that she was blind, deaf, and mute. She learned through the loving and patient guidance of Ann Sullivan to communicate first through touch and then through speech. When Ann tried to share her faith and tell Helen about God, Helen said, "I already know about him, I just didn't know his name." Maybe you know about God sending his son. Maybe you know his name is Jesus, and now you want to get to know him. In this new year of 2020, we'd love to help you in your spiritual journey. I want to invite you to join us back in this room on Sunday at 10:30 for a combined worship service as I share a New Year's message on priorities entitled First Things First. Right now, we're going to sing the song Silent Night, close out our time here this afternoon. And as we sing, would you offer that as worship to him? As we live for him in this coming year, as we await his promised return to earth, may we give him our very best. Let's stand as we sing.